I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, and welcome to Vet Voice, the Pet Pod. This is the podcast that's all about pets. I'm Zara Boland. I'm a veterinarian, a consultant, and all-around animal lover. And each episode of the Pet Pod, I'll be joined by some of my veterinary friends and colleagues from across the pet healthcare industry to offer you handy tips and expert advice to help keep your beloved family pet healthy and above all happy. So today we're discussing the really important topic of socializing our young companion pets, and I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, who's Dr. Kirsty Zexel, all the way from Sydney in Australia, and she's the world's only triple board certified animal behaviourist, which means that she's a recognised specialist in veterinary animal behaviour across Australia, Europe and America. Kirsty actually pioneered the concept of both puppy preschool and kitten kindy classes, and she designed them to help owners and their pets really to understand each other better so that they can learn to live in harmony. So Kirsty, welcome to the Pet Pod.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of everything, there's a really good reason why you decided to specialize in behavioral medicine, isn't there?
Yes, there is. It's a long and convoluted story, but in a nutshell, I studied veterinary science at Sydney University in Australia, hence my beautiful Australian accent. And then, like all Aussie vets, if we do the expedition to the UK, so I said to my mother, I'll be back in 6 months. I'm just going to have a little bit of a look around. And 5 years later, I was still living in the UK, and then it got to a point of, will I stay or will I come home? And I'm sorry, the weather in the UK just didn't agree with Australia, who was being born and bred with blue skies and sunshine. So back I came. But when I walked out of university, I said, that's it. I've done 5 years study. I'm never going to darken the doorstep of another university again. That's it. I've done my dash with studying. But while I was in the UK, I had the privilege of working with a couple of vets there and non-vets and in veterinary hospitals. Bruce Fogle, who had a veterinary hospital in London, and also Roger Mugford, that's it. I had the privilege of watching Roger Mugford do a few consultations, and I thought, wow, isn't that really interesting? He talks about behaviour in animals like we weren't taught anything about that. And while I was working in the UK, I also discovered a very sad fact, which still almost holds true now, 20-odd years later, that more animals are euthanized or surrendered because of behavior problems than any other cause, all other causes, in fact, put together. So neoplasia, infectious diseases, put them all together, more animals are surrendered or euthanized because of their behavior problems. And I just couldn't believe I'd spent 5 years at university and I couldn't help most of my patients. And that seemed to me a travesty that that was what was happening. So I looked into how I could learn more about animal behaviour. The only people who were working in the field at that point that I could get a hold of were all human psychologists. So I came back to Australia. I did a degree in human psychology. Yep, back to a university. And then I started looking at, puppy training and kitten kindy. And so I pioneered puppy classes and kitten kindy classes in Australia. And of course, that meant doing a thesis on that to actually prove that it did help. And then it's gone on and on from there. So I now have what I call an alphabet soup behind my name. But it has taken me into an area, I think, that is still not well recognized, even though there's lots more specialists in behavioral medicine now all over the world. And I think that's a really, really good thing. And the trend now is not to call us animal behaviorists. Most of us call ourselves veterinary behaviorists. behaviourists or, in fact, veterinary psychiatrists. And that's really the trend, that we are really the psychiatrists of the animal world, looking at animals that have mental health issues. Because, as you would appreciate, Zara, many, many years ago, people didn't even think humans had mental health issues. And it wasn't very well recognised. And depression, well, why don't you just get out of bed, and what's wrong with you? And it was laughed at. Whereas now it's taken very seriously. We understand that people do have mental health issues, that they can suffer from anxiety and depression. And I guess in these COVID times, we're seeing more and more of that. And now it's well recognized that animals have the same issues. So it's a long story, but I just couldn't believe I was working in a field where I was trying to help animals and I couldn't help the vast majority of them, which struck me as just travesty.
Yeah, it's horrendous when you put it like that. It's quite shocking. And I really like that term. I haven't heard that one, veterinary psychiatrist. It makes a lot of sense. You did mention puppy preschool and kitten kindy, and that's what I'd like to get into. Talk us through the concept behind it. So from my memory, it was really an opportunity to help pets, puppies and kittens, become more socialized and therefore integrate better perhaps into our lives, as well as maybe give us the understanding of their behavior to help integrate us with them.
I think it's an interesting concept because certainly when I was growing up and certainly at vet school, the theory was that you didn't train dogs till they were 6 months of age. And once you learned a little bit about behavior, you know, it was quite obvious that these puppies were learning things well and truly before 6 months of age. And we were just missing out on a fabulous opportunity. And when I first started, I thought, yeah, this socialization business is really, really important, and we probably need to be teaching puppies some manners at an early age. Hence puppy preschool, that's where the name came from. Once I started doing that, people said, well, if you're doing this for dogs, why don't you do it for cats? So hence Kitten Kindy was born. And I think the original concept of making it a school, a teaching environment, was really important. But what I have changed over the years is the focus, that I don't think we're really teaching the puppies that much. They know how to sit, they know how to come, they know how to do all that. They just don't know the words we attach to them. But what we are teaching is the owners. And I don't think we should be teaching puppies or kittens obedience per se. I think it's about teaching good manners, how they can actually live in that household in harmony, stay with their owners, so that we don't see them suddenly at 12 months of age or 2 years of age being surrendered or euthanized. And if people understand the behavior of the animal and why the dog is doing that and why the cat's doing that, I think they're more likely to go, okay, it's not being naughty, it's not being disobedient. And we actually have to understand that what they're doing is maybe just what we bred dogs to do for thousands and thousands of years. I think the other concept that's really important is the socialization concept. And one of the things where perhaps it's gone a bit adrift when I watch some people doing puppy classes, it's all about play, but it's not about play. Socialization, the definition is actually how to accept the close proximity of members of your own species and other species. It does not mean you have to be first best friends with every other dog you meet or every cat you meet or every person you meet. You just have to accept them or tolerate their presence. And I think the concept of wanting all these animals to play is really not valid, because play is complex. The way animals play is very different from humans. It's very beautiful to watch. It's really, really nice to see. But in fact, if you don't watch animals play and know when it's not becoming appropriate play, that can lead to a lot of problems. And, you know, it's like watching kids play. There's a point where you watch them and you think, yeah, this is good. And then you think, no, I have to step in. Otherwise, somebody's going to be in tears. And that certainly happens, what we see in puppy classes. And we don't see it so much in kitten classes, because we finish the class before the kittens actually start to do that play fighting. But yeah, play is important, but it's not socialization. And I don't think obedience or training is important. I think teaching good manners is really, really important. And the manners have to be what's acceptable, because, you know, how your dog belongs in your household and behaves, I may not want to live with a dog that has those manners, but you do. And you may not want to live with my dog with her manners, but I do. So I think there's that very individual acceptance of what the animal can and can't do, knowing its normal or natural behaviour, as well as what our expectations are.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. But to come back to socialization, because I think there's a really key area there as well that I'd like to talk about. I remember learning the key phases for socialization, and they're quite early. And correct me if I'm wrong, but from puppies, I think there was two phases for socialization, actually. There was a very early one from 3 to 6 weeks or thereabouts, another one from 8 to 12 weeks, and kittens then are different. So remind us about these key socialization periods and why they're so important.
The socialization period of dogs is thought to be between 3 weeks and 3 months, so 3 to 12 weeks of age, absolutely correct. In that early phase, it's all about learning how to interact with other dogs, learning how to interact with their litter mates, learning from their mother, what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. You know, if you go and bite your mum, she's probably not going to be happy with that, but she doesn't actually scruff you and shake you around, which is one of the odd things that I find people want to do to puppies when the dogs don't do that to each other. So, you know, it's an odd thing. And then after that is the phase where they really start to learn from humans. And that's why we often think it's a good idea that in that later phase, probably 8 weeks of age, is a good time to go to your new home, because that's when you're, as a puppy, you're most, I guess, able to learn to fit in with the environment that the humans expect you to live in, you know, in harmony, which is what it's all about. So, and we know that if puppies haven't had that exposure to other dogs or to humans and only lived in a kennel, by 14 weeks of age, sometimes they just, it's much, much harder to socialize them. So one of the reasons we want to run puppy classes is we want to run them when they're 8 weeks of age or older, so that they have had their first vaccination or at least their first health check, and they're fine to mix with other puppies and with other people. But we don't want puppies that are old. And one of the other things I've noticed over time is people including small size puppies, and he's 18 weeks of age and he's only a puppy. Well, no, he's puppy size, but he's actually not a puppy anymore. And I always liken that to sort of, if you have a 7-year-old kid and a 15-year-old kid, do you want them in the same footy team? Probably not. So you have to keep them in that same age group of where they're learning to play at the same time. So puppy classes, ideally we have puppies between, say, 9 and 12 weeks of age when they start, so that they're not too old, they graduate together at the same time. Kittens, their socialization period is very different. It finishes much earlier. The kitten socialization period is between about 3 weeks to about 7 weeks of age, maybe 9 weeks of age. So most people are not going to get their kitten until after their socialization period. So this is why it's so important that breeders actually do the socialization. They pick up the kittens, they carry them around, they introduce them to other kittens and to people and as well, so that they know what they're getting into. And kitten classes, I like kittens to be less than 12 weeks of age, because by 14 weeks of age, they're starting to play fight. So, and if you have kittens of an older age, then one of the things I recommend is, why don't the owners just come? We can do that education of the owners, explain what cats do, that they like vertical surfaces, and that's why your cat's always going to be on top of the counter, on top of the fridge, on top of the shelf, and doing all the things that you don't want it to do, but that's where the cat likes to be, up high and seeing what's going on. So even explaining some of those things to owners can make that life with that new kitten or older cat much more harmonious for everybody.
Mm. No, that's a good idea, actually. And in fact, it harks back to what we were saying earlier, that the classes are good manner schools, if you like. I quite like that concept or that phrase for puppies, and of course kittens if they're young enough, but equally it's for us to understand their behaviors better and help them integrate into our lives. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So reverting back to the concept of playing, and when it tips over into perhaps not being so much fun for someone, how should we react if our puppy or kitten isn't displaying what we consider to be good manners, and we want them to change that behavior? I remember from my own training, it was all about positive reinforcement, not punishing, and well, not necessarily ignoring either.
Well, nothing's much changed in that department. It's absolutely always positive reinforcement. Remember, the puppy or kitten, if they're doing something that you don't want, maybe you haven't taught them what you do want. And, you know, it doesn't help for them to get into trouble, or for you and I to get into trouble, if we don't know what the right thing is. So it's always better, I think, to reinforce or reward the behaviour you want. I don't think we should be ignoring those behaviours. That's what people often say, just ignore them, it'll go away. Well, mostly when animals do a behaviour like that, they're actually seeking information. And if we do not give them the information of what you would like them to do now, then that's actually quite detrimental, because living in a void, it doesn't help us go forward. So nothing's changed about no punishment. Bad things happen to animals anyway, you know. The kitten's going to fall down a flight of stairs if he goes down there. You know, the dog might poke his nose into a rose bush and get pricked. But we don't have to inflict that punishment. That's really not our job if we're going to look after them and help them be the best pet they can be. It's all about rewarding the behaviour we want, redirecting them if they're doing something we don't want. But certainly, you know, when people say they're attention seeking, I don't think they are. I think they're looking for information. We're just not very good at giving them the information that they need. So you're on the right tram. We haven't changed from the positive side of things, but I think more it's not the ignoring it anymore, and certainly no role for punishment whatsoever. Now, that doesn't mean you can't distract them. If you've got a puppy that's doing something you don't want, you can say, hey, come over here. Let me show you something else. This is much better to be doing this. So you distract them and tell them what you want them to do. Now, I don't want you to chew up that rug, but wow, this is a really good toy. You could have a chew at that instead. So we're teaching them what we actually want them to do rather than always paying attention to them when they're doing what we don't want. And I think that's a real problem. So I think as long as we stick to the same tram, this is good, let's do something else, give you the information you need, I think those animals are going to grow up as best they can, provided that they're neurotypical or normal.
Well, I think I have my own good example of that, Kirsty, and that's, I'm going to talk about my own dog, Rumba, who you've met. She was a puppy at that stage, of course, but she's a lot bigger now, but still has the habit. When she was a puppy, she used to do a lot of mouthing, as all puppies do, and I didn't particularly want her chewing holes in my arms or ripping my shoes apart, so I used to take the nearest soft toy and replace my arm or the shoe with that as a distraction technique, and it's got to the point now where it's actually getting quite embarrassing because anytime anybody comes to the door or we have guests or visitors or even someone checking the gas meter, she'll dive to the toy box, pick up any toy that comes to hand and literally come running to the front door to greet that person with the soft toy hanging out of her mouth. So it's not the best guard dog look, but it's certainly an effective distraction technique that's survived well into adulthood.
Oh, I think her size would be the guard dog. Look, she doesn't have to do anything else but just be there. But yeah, look, I think that's really important because she needed to know what to do. And if you had shouted at her, she wouldn't be any the wiser. And now she's going, oh, I know. If I get really excited, I need to put something in my mouth. Well, let me go find something I can put in my mouth. That's a perfectly reasonable thing, you know. You and I, sometimes we open the fridge door and look in there and put something in our mouths, you know.
Indeed we do, all too often in the last few months during COVID, in fact. Anyway, so back to puppies and kittens and training them or teaching them good manners. So when it comes to family and you've got children in the house, particularly young children, I know it's really important to have everybody, I guess, singing from the same hymn sheet when it comes to giving directions and training those good manners for our puppies and kittens, but I suppose particularly for our puppies. So do you have any advice for how to go about that? And also let's touch on it while we're talking about children, you know, not leaving children unsupervised or alone with their pets.
Kids are very good at modeling and watching what their parents do. And if they see their parents doing a behavior, and this is why I really don't like things like punishment, because the parents smack the dog, then of course, then they might smack the dog. And that is not going to augur well if the child does that. So I think if you can model your behavior in the way that you'd like to behave, kids certainly need supervision. Generally, as a rule of thumb, most veterinary behaviorists and pediatricians, certainly in Australia, would recommend that no child under 8 is ever left unsupervised with any dog. It doesn't matter how good the child is, how good the dog is. And supervision means that you have to be able to reach both with one arm, arm's length. So it's not being in the same room with them. It's just, okay, there's a dog here. I have to be able to reach the dog and somebody else has to be able to reach the child, because that's when accidents happen. It's only a split second and things can go wrong. You know, dogs and kids get on really, really well together, but sometimes we can be lulled into a false sense of security. And really, I think where it comes important to think about it is your dog might have been fabulous with your child, but now your dog's got an earache and your child touches that ear. Well, what's the dog going to do? React. And if you're not there and you don't know that dog has a sore ear or a sore back, there's potential for disaster. And dogs often growl. Kids don't recognize a growl as, please, I just need my space here. Some children have actually interpreted when the dog shows its teeth as a smile, because when we smile, it's a friendly gesture, but the dog showing its teeth, that isn't a friendly gesture. And one of the things I really like to teach in puppy classes is that, you know, growling is okay. It's a really good thing for dogs to do. It's not something we should knock out of them, because people in the old days used to go, oh, the dog should never growl. Well, the growl is the dog's early warning sign. It's the one that's saying, hey, I'm a bit worried, I'm a bit scared. You know, it's really a dog's cry for help. Like, you know, please don't come any closer to me and please don't hurt me. And if their dog can't growl, that's when we're going to have issues. So understanding that very simple body language can be really, really helpful. And I think with parents, supervision is the key. Make sure the dog has something good to do. It's really hard if the dog is jumping around as a puppy and nipping, kids scream. Well, that's just exciting. So best time to supervise, keep them separated at those times when everybody's calmer. Kids, certainly over 4 years of age, I found some of the best trainers in the world for teaching puppies to sit and calm and stay, of 4-year-olds and above, because they really like doing that. And the puppies really respond to it and you get a really nice relationship between them.
That's a great idea.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There are other signs that can also be misinterpreted when it comes to body language, though, aren't there, Kirsty, such as wagging tails?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people often think that dog wagging its tail is a friendly dog. A wagging tail just means I'm willing to interact. Doesn't necessarily tell you it's going to be a friendly interaction or not. So a lot of people get bitten by a dog wagging its tail, but it's the speed of the wag, the height of the wag. Somebody's actually done a study looking at which way the wag goes. You can't really do that without very, very good scientific equipment to measure whether the dog wags to the left or the right. But I think the thing is that, you know, just because the dog's wagging its tail doesn't mean it's necessarily friendly. I think it's always better to let the dog approach you rather than you go up to the dog. I think that gives the dog that choice of, well, I'm not sure about you, maybe I'll keep my distance. I think actually COVID's been a fabulous thing for dogs because people have kept their distance a lot of the time and they are probably learning that you don't want to necessarily be in close contact with others. So
there's a lot in that, Kirsty. And I just want to pick up on talking about direction of tail wagging, because I have a theory. Maybe it's an upcoming research opportunity to see if tails wag in different directions in the northern and southern hemispheres, like water going down a plug hole.
You know, I don't know. There's another study somebody should be looking at.
But let's stay on this topic for just a little bit longer. And it is an important one. And that's the topic of approaching dogs. And again, I can speak to personal experience at this with my own dog, Rumba. She tends to get a lot of attention when we're out walking. And most people, without thinking, seem to always approach dogs, or more often than not approach dogs with their hand out, ready to pat them on the head. And that's not the best way to approach a dog now, is it, Kirsty?
Well, most of us, if you recall the days you were a child, you know, how many of us liked when some adult said, oh, aren't you cute, or aren't you a bonny wee lass, or whatever And we didn't like being patted on the head either. And it's, you know, dogs don't pat each other on the head. I don't know. I think we do it because we're taller than them and we can. But really, it's not a language that dogs understand. Most dogs really like being patted under the chin or at the side. It's very threatening to loom over, because that's what we would do, over the top of the dog's head. And I don't think that we know enough about, you know, which dogs would like it. And certainly some dogs, I mean, my little dog doesn't mind being patted on top of the head. But I think if I was walking her down the street and every stranger wanted to pat her on the head, she'd certainly go, enough, I don't want any more of this. So it's always better to let the dog approach you if you want to pat it. I think it's always important to teach kids to ask the owners if it's okay to pat the dog, and then it's got to ask the dog if it's okay. And then if you're going to pat the dog underneath the chin or down the side, is a much safer place than on top of its head or along its back. And that way, again, the dog knows what's going to be happening, rather than suddenly have this hand reaching over the top of it. And kids aren't always the gentlest of patters on the head. So again, think about if you've got a headache or you've got sore ears, that perhaps being patted on the head is not the appropriate way to go.
Absolutely. So let's talk about cats and a little bit of cat body language, because cats can be a little bit trickier to read than dogs. They certainly give signals just like dogs do. They can twitch their tail, their ears can move backwards a little bit, but it's a lot more subtle than dogs, especially when they're on the cusp of getting a little bit angry.
Yeah, cats are very fast in how they communicate. They're much subtler. They, you know, the twitching of the tail, you know, somebody once said to me, oh, does a waggy tail mean the dog is friendly? Well, it might. Does a waggy tail on a cat mean it's friendly? Never. So if you see a cat twitching its tail, that's not the cat to go and approach. If its ears go back, if its pupils get really wide, you certainly do not want to go near that cat. Again, I always let animals approach me if they want to. If they don't want to approach me, that's fine. But cats, I think because they're so subtle, like blocking behaviours, they will sit in the doorway and they don't want you or anybody else to go past. And if you go past, well, don't be surprised if suddenly a paw lashes out and scratches you. But the cat's actually telling you in cat language, you don't need to be coming past me at the moment. So with cats, it's not only the twitching tail, it's the position of the ears, the size of the pupils, if you see that body tension, and certainly if they're blocking access to something, you wouldn't want to walk past that cat in a hurry.
So we're all still at various different stages of managing and learning to live alongside coronavirus. And this might have had an impact for some people who've been expecting to bring their puppy or their kitten home, but it's been delayed. So Kirsty, if we're getting an older pet from a breeder and it's still a puppy or kitten, but just that little bit older and past the socialization phase we talked about earlier, or if we're adopting from an animal rescue shelter where we don't have any real knowledge of the dog or the cat's background or history or what shaped its current behavior, does this actually have an impact on how we approach teaching our new pet good manners if they're a little bit older?
You know, the same applies regardless of age. We always want to teach them what we want, reward that behavior. If they're doing something that we may not be that happy with, then we want to distract them from it and still keep rewarding. I don't believe in punishing even older animals. And older animals, I guess one of the things that's important to recognize is we don't really know enough about what happened to them before. We don't even really know that much about puppy behavior either, in the sense that even if you go to a reputable breeder, because behavior is much more complex than just its genetics. And because it, you know, had a Labrador for a mum and a Labrador for a dad, it's going to be a friendly Labrador. We know with behavior, it's genetics, learning, and environment. Those three things interact. But now we also know that it's not only genetics, like the Mendelian genetics that we were taught at school, but it's epigenetics. So the way the bitch was treated during pregnancy can have an effect on the behavior of the puppies. Even the way the grandmother was thought to be treated during pregnancy can have an effect. So it's not just what you see is what you get. It may go back generations. So if the mother was stressed during pregnancy, we're going to have problems. If you've got a male puppy between two female puppies in the womb, that there's other influences there that may also have an effect. So it is much more complex than just I'll go to this really good breeder and I've seen the mother or father, I've seen the other litters. You still don't know what's happened well and truly. And that becomes even truer when you've got an animal that's been perhaps in a rescue, maybe three or four homes, who knows what's happened to it, because we really have no idea at all. And sometimes it's okay to go, okay, well, we don't know, but does it really matter? And what we need to work on is teaching them what kind of manners we'd like them. Both of my dogs that I have had have been rescue dogs. I didn't know anything about them. One was a purebred and I did have the pedigrees, but the other one, you know, my husband brought home when I said, no, I don't need another nut roll in the house, but he brought her home. And she's a lovely, lovely, delightful little dog, but I have no idea. I had her DNA tested because I just couldn't work out what breed she was, and she's half Whippet and half Boxer. Comes from a pedigree line in the UK. How do you believe that? But there you go. But it's interesting because her behaviour is neither of one of those breeds would be, and really that's not the issue. It's I've taught her the manners that I want for her. Interestingly enough, Zara, you may remember that I do speak two languages, and she was terrified when she came out of the rescue, and she would just run away if we spoke to her in English. And so I started speaking to her in Estonian, and she started to learn everything. And it's not the language, I think it just sounds different, so that if she'd had bad experiences, somebody speaking loudly in English was a frightening thing as far as she's concerned. So my husband's had to learn a few words of Estonian, but she's bilingual now, you know, and sometimes I throw in German words as well and sometimes French words. It's not the words. It's the tone of voice that does it, you know. It's not the words. And, you know, if you know how to be kind to them, you know how to reward them, you can lure them and you reward them for doing the right thing. You know, that's, and it's really the same principle regardless of age. It's always about rewarding the nice behaviours that you want, the appropriate behaviours that you want. And if they seek direction, give them direction. I think that's probably the biggest thing that people forget, that they don't hop out of their womb knowing exactly what we want from them. We have to teach them the way that we want to live with them. And one of the things that I've been a strong advocate about, if you remember from way back when, I really hate that terminology, responsible pet ownership, because I think it should be socially responsible pet ownership. As society changes, we have different expectations. When I was growing up, nobody picked up the poop. You know, when the dog did it on the street, now in Australia, it's against the law. You have to pick up the poop. Dogs are on lead. You know, you only go to off-leash parks because society's expectations of animals have changed. Whereas 100 years ago, we had totally different expectations. And look how well most of them have managed. You know, they've managed to fit in what with the kind of things that we want them to do. You know, they're just really adaptable, fabulous animals, and cats are the same. And cats, I think, you know, sometimes go, well, I don't want to do what you're asking, so I'm just going to go and sit in another room for a while. But in fact, we can train cats just as easily. I think because, and just heading back to cat body language, I think some of the things that I really worry about, because cat body language is so subtle, people often miss that they're worried and anxious because they go and hide. And so the dog that's worried about thunderstorms or fireworks, or the dog that destroys your house or eats your shoes, boy, you're going to notice that and you're going to do something about it. But the cat that's just as terrified and anxious goes and sits under the bed. Whole different ball game. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of education to do in puppy classes and kitten classes, so people actually are better at understanding the nature of animals.
But let's return to cats and training our kittens. So my cat, for example, he's trained to sit when he receives, the rare occasion when he receives a food reward. But I know that some cats can actually be trained to do obstacle courses and all sorts of different things. And so how far can you take it when it comes to training cats? Or in fact, how far should we take it when it comes to training our cats?
Well, it really depends on you. I mean, I'm, as an owner, I don't teach my dogs tricks because I don't think they need to know tricks. I need her to be well-behaved, well-mannered, be nice. I mean, I've seen goldfish do obstacle courses. I mean, we can teach them to do all this stuff. But my question is always, are we doing it for us or are we doing it for them? And you can teach them to do anything that is within their ability to do so. You know, there's no doubt that if that's part of their natural behaviours, you can get them to do it. But I always ask, why do you want to do that? I do think that we do need to be meeting their physical needs and their emotional needs and their environmental needs. I absolutely believe that. But really, do they have to learn how to dance because you want to dance with them? You know, I mean, if your pet really enjoys it, I don't have any problem with that. But I watch so many animals doing stuff, and if you look at their body language and you look at their stress levels, they're doing it because they can, not because they want to. And I went around the world a few years ago doing a whole pile of lectures that I entitled Just Because We Can, Should We? And I think that's something to think about. It. Yeah, I can teach my dog to do all sorts of things, but should I be doing that? You know, is teaching a dog to walk on its back legs something that it wants to do? Well, think about what pressures you're putting on its hips and on its back. You know, if you want to be a ballerina, well, you can do that because you want to do that. And then you pay the price for what happens to your feet when you get older. If you want to be an athlete, you pay the price for doing that, you know, but it's your choice to do it. When we have animals, it's our choice whether we do that. So I'm all for giving them lots of physical and mental exercise and meeting their needs. But yeah, how far do you take it? I guess it depends on you and the pet. And I know there's some dogs who actually love doing the training, you know, like they can't wait to do it. But I've also seen others that, you can almost see the sigh, like, here we go again, do we have to? And I watch dogs, and COVID's been really interesting, that even walking the dog, everybody's out there exercising and they take the dog for a walk because that's what you're supposed to do. I've seen dogs actually throw themselves on the ground and go, no, I'm not going any further. You know, you want to walk 10 kilometres, you go right ahead, but I've done my one and I'm just not going to go any further. And I think we need to always take into consideration what their needs and wants might be, not just what we might want from them, because they're fabulous parts of our lives and we need to respect, you know, their needs and emotions as well.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Kirsty. And I think the key takeaway for me there is providing enough mental and physical stimulation to meet their needs. So for cats, as we alluded to earlier, it's giving them those vertical spaces so that they can enjoy jumping up and down, surveying their territory from on high, and using toys like fishing rod toys, which stimulate their prey behaviours. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast, Kirsty. So what would be your biggest piece of advice when it comes to understanding and teaching our pets good manners?
Well, there's three things that I think are really, really important for animals. I think they like routines. That's really, really important. So most animals, if you give them a routine, doesn't mean you do something at 6 and something at 7 or something at 8, but having a routine for them is really, really important. I think giving them rewards is really important. Rewarding the behaviour you want rather than just ignoring them is really, really important. And one of the things that has really become obvious to me in the last few months with COVID is animals need rest. And most dogs and cats need at least 16 hours of rest and sleep a day. And what's happening, if we're home with them all the time, we're taking them for walks, we interact with them, we're doing stuff, and there's nothing like lack of sleep to make you irritable. And, you know, if you think about the 3 hours, routine, rewards and rest, you're probably going to have the best way that you can live with your animal. And I think just enjoy them for what they are. They all have different personalities. They all have different quirks. And I guess if I want to finish with one thing is recognize that animals have mental health issues. We know at least 20% of them do. So if you're struggling with your pet, time to see your vet.
Yes, always, always go and see your vet if you have any concerns. But I like that a lot, Kirsty, the 3 hours. And in fact, I think it just became the 4 hours, routine, reward, rest, and recognize that pets have mental health issues. In fact, I think I might take those 4 hours into my own life. I think it could work just as well for us as well as for our pets.
Absolutely.
Well, Kirsty, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, as always.
It's been lots of fun to catch up again, and we should do it again sometime.
Well, that's all for this episode of Vet Voice. Don't forget that nobody knows your pet like you do. So if you're in any way worried or concerned about your pet's health, please be sure to contact your own local veterinary practice. And to make sure that you receive the next episode of the Pet Pod, please do like, share, and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.